This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
Our Perseverance found that there used to be water on the surface of Mars. Now, Mars can't have liquid water on its surface at the moment, but it found that in the past there was water on Mars. So this poem by Sam Ellingworth from the United Kingdom is called Over Martian Shores, and it's inspired by that finding.
A riddle wrapped in burnished dust turns its wounded face towards our gaze, furrowed brows guarding tales of distance, water, life. A canvas of history stretched out across this bed of broken mouths, every layer a story told in pride as our envoys dead and certain eyes peer deep into the withered surface soul. Layers once flat and plain now tilt disrupted, revealing ghosts of ancient lakes, calm and still until a break. A pause before the delta's birth, and within the trembling hopeful sounds of flowing, living, being.
There is so much happening in space and related to space, it is difficult for us here at the Space Show to keep up with it all. I must thank Space Association President Michael Abdillah for alerting us to a story you may have heard last month. But, oh dear, many of the headlines were absolutely wrong. Take a listen.
Scientific American. Mars hides colossal ocean deep below its surface. An underground Martian ocean could hold enough liquid to cover the red planet with a mile of water. Geophysicists have discovered a gigantic hidden ocean beneath Mars's surface, and they say it could harbor life. PBS News. An ocean's worth of water may be hiding beneath Mars's dusty surface, new study suggests. Al Jazeera. New study suggests ocean of water lies beneath Mars's surface. Would a hidden ocean on Mars spur human settlement? A new NASA study suggests Mars contains an ocean of water underground, sparking conversations about human settlement. Deutsche Welle. Liquid ocean discovered beneath Mars' surface. Mars has a massive liquid water ocean, according to new analysis of data from NASA's retired InSight lander. Voice of America. Ocean could lie beneath Mars' surface, study says. Xinhua. New research suggests presence of concealed ocean beneath surface of Mars. Fox Live Now. Mars may be hiding an ocean of water miles below its dusty surface, research suggests.
Well, at least most news outlets, but not all, in the body of their report, accurately said it was a reservoir of water trapped in the cracks between rocks. Not a liquid ocean, as is believed to lie below the icy crust of the Jovian moon Europa. Our very own ABC headlined the story correctly.
Scientists say they've discovered signs of a reservoir of liquid water on Mars, deep in the rocky outer crust of the planet. The study, based on seismic measurements from NASA's InSight lander, suggests there may be enough water for a global ocean, but it's 11 to 20 kilometres down in the Martian crust.
Vashan Wright was one of the team that published their findings in the Proceedings of the United States Academy of Sciences. In summary, the paper reads,
liquid water existed at least episodically on Mars in rivers, lakes, oceans, and aquifers during the Noachian and Hesperian more than 3 billion years ago. Mars lost its ability to host persistent bodies of liquid water on its surface after the planet lost most of its atmosphere during this time period. The ancient surface water may have been incorporated in minerals, buried as ice, sequestered as liquid in deep aquifers, or lost to space. We assess whether seismic velocity and bulk density data are consistent with liquid water-saturated pores in the mid-crust at a depth of 11.5, plus or minus 3.1 kilometers to 20, plus or minus 5 kilometers within 50 kilometers of the InSight lander. The mid-crust is one of four robust seismically detectable kilometer-scale layers beneath InSight, and maybe global.
Note that maybe global, not is global. As for ocean, well, wet rocks do not an ocean make. This water could only form an ocean if the impossible feat of bringing it to the surface of Mars were achieved. In his own words, the Scripps Institute of Oceanography's Vashon Wright said this.
The purpose of the InSight mission was to learn about the evolution of Mars as a planet. For work that I've been a part of, the most interesting finding is this present one, that there is large amounts of liquid water in the subsurface of the planet itself. The liquid water is roughly 11 to 20 kilometers beneath the subsurface, and getting that liquid water would be quite challenging. For example, on Earth, you often have to circulate fluids, whether that be liquid water or mud, to make drilling a little bit easier. You also need the power capabilities, and you need to bring those things on Mars. Water affects just about everything about a planet's evolution. In Mars, we get to see a water cycle without humans. We know that water is a key ingredient for life as we know it. Mars once looked like Earth 3 billion years ago. And now it doesn't. It's dry and it's desolate. And so a big question is, where is the water? Where did it go? Finding it there in the volumes that we found it is really important and exciting.
So when you read a headline for a science story in a popular news source, just remember... Well, this is the Space Show. We have just established that Mars is not an ocean world. Well, Cynthia Phillips is a planetary geologist and Europa Clipper staff scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. She explains what an ocean world is and lists the known ones.
So when we think of an ocean world, we usually think of a world like the Earth. And the Earth has a metallic core in the middle, then we have a rocky layer on top of that, and then our nice ocean of liquid water. And on top of that ocean is an atmosphere. And then atmosphere helps to protect our ocean and insulate it from the vacuum of space. And so when we originally thought about worlds that could be habitable, we thought of worlds like the Earth. But what we found as we've started to explore our solar system is that there's a different kind of ocean world that's here in our very own solar system. And these are ocean worlds like Jupiter's moon Europa. And so Europa is a moon. It's about the same size as Earth's moon, but Europa actually has an ocean of liquid water underneath an ice layer. And so what we see on Europa is an ice layer at the surface. We see an ocean of liquid water, and then under that ocean, in the next slide, you see that there's a rocky layer and a metallic layer. So it's just like the interior of Earth, except that you have an ice layer on the surface. And so basically, we found multiple worlds like Europa in our solar system that have this ice layer at the surface and then an ocean beneath it. We have worlds in the Jupiter system, so we have not just Europa, but also Ganymede and Callisto, we think, have oceans below their icy surfaces. In the Saturn system, we have the large moon Titan, and then the tiny moons Mimas and Enceladus, we also think have subsurface oceans. Out in the Uranus system, we have Ariel, Umbriel, Titania, and Oberon, which are suspected to have subsurface oceans. Out in the Neptune system, we have Triton, and we even have some dwarf planets like Pluto and Charon. And Ceres, which we also think could have subsurface oceans below a surface ice layer.
The Europa Clipper spacecraft is at the Kennedy Space Center at the moment, and it's being prepared for a launch on October the 10th, October 10 US time. Now, Kurt Niebuhr is a project scientist on the mission, and recently he made this comment.
This is an epic mission. It's a chance for us to explore not a world that might have been habitable billions of years ago, but a world that might be habitable today, right now. A chance to do the first exploration of this new kind of world that we've discovered very recently called an ocean world that is just totally immersed and covered in a liquid water ocean, completely unlike anything we've seen before. That's what's awaiting us at Europa. That's what Europa Clipper and her team are going to unveil for us.
Jordan Evans is also on the mission, staying here on Earth, of course, and he talked about the radiation that is a great threat to the mission.
And I'll start by saying we are ready for Jupiter. You know, now that we've completed this key NASA review, we're focused on heading towards the launch pad, doing the final preparations. Our launch period opens October 10th, and we're on track to start that journey to Jupiter. One big challenge was analyzing how those transistors on the spacecraft would handle the radiation environment at Jupiter. And after extensive testing and analysis of the transistors, the Europa Clipper project and I personally have high confidence that we can complete the original mission for exploring Europa as planned. It's a very difficult environment in terms of radiation at Europa. Jupiter is engulfed in more radiation than any planet in our solar system. That's one of the reasons why exploring the Jupiter system is so challenging. The radiation near Jupiter is a kind of space weather. It bombards everything in its sphere of influence with damaging particles. The planet's giant magnetic field acts as a particle accelerator. It captures those particles, accelerates charged particles to create these powerful radiation belts. And Europa sits near the outer edge of the worst part of that radiation belt. And so flying near Europa exposes us to this high flux of damaging particles. And so the mission engineers on Europa Clipper need to be sure that the spacecraft components can survive that radiation environment for the duration of our four-year prime mission.
Some sloppy reporters, irresponsible ones, have said that Europa Clipper is going to search for life. But no, it's not.
This is Kurt Niebuhr. It's important to note that Europa Clipper is not a life detection mission, and there are two reasons for that. One is it would be premature. The first thing we need to do is figure out, are the proper ingredients there to support life as we know it? And as Dr. Fox mentioned, we're reasonably confident that almost all of those ingredients are there, but we don't know for sure. So we need to answer the habitability question first. And the reason we need to answer the habitability question first is because of the second reason. We don't have a life detector. There's no such thing as a tricorder instrument that we can point at something and it returns a blip or a blop, telling us if it's alive or not. It is extremely difficult to be able to detect life, especially from orbit. So first we're going to ask the straightforward question. Are the proper ingredients there for life to exist? And you can bet your bottom dollar that if Europa Clipper tells us, yes, those ingredients are there, that we are going to be knocking on the door fighting for a second mission to go looking for life.
Can I just add one thing to that? This is Lori. Hey, Joel. The thing we will learn with Europa Clipper is where follow-up missions might want to go, right? We'll learn where the ice might be thinned, where there could be upwelling of water from the ocean in modern times. And so we're going to learn a lot about how to get smarter about asking that question over time.
And the question is, well, what will they do if they find or not find those conditions?
I don't think there's a worst case because honestly, we're going to learn so much. It's going to be incredible no matter what we find. That's the beauty of exploring the unknown in new ways, which we're definitely doing with the incredible depth and detail we're going to get from Europa Clipper's 10 science investigations. So we're going to explore the icy shell and the ocean beneath to the sensing that from our multiple flybys. We're going to be looking at the chemistry of the system, that is both the chemistry on the surface and in anything that's being emitted from the surface, any kind of plumes that will fly through and sort of taste the rainbow at Europa and get to tell what materials are being emitted. And then lastly, we'll be looking at the surface, the geology, if you will, of this icy crust to understand the geologic history of this moon, including potentially very recent activity that would change the surface. And so we're just going to be learning a ton about the physical and chemical makeup of Europa and how it is changing and evolving over time. All of these will teach us about whether this environment is habitable.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that the sort of the idea of the bad result, you know, as you say, there's no bad. If we go there and we find water and energy and chemistry, that opens up a whole realm of questions. If we go there and we find no water, no energy, and no chemistry, that also opens up a whole wealth of questions. Why did we think this, and why is it not there? So there really is not. This is a voyage into the unknown, and this is it's going to be incredible science, no matter which way of the equation it falls.
And I think it's important to point out that with the 10 investigations, it's extraordinarily multidisciplinary. We're sensing this moon in pretty much every way we can think of, without landing on it. Right, we're flying by it, but we're going to get different spectral signatures. We're going to be, you know, penetrating the ice with radar. We're going to be looking at magnetic signatures, at particles and fields, at chemistry, like every single way you can think of, we are going to be analyzing it. It's a very comprehensive and multidisciplinary payload, and the team will work together to sort of fuse those results into new insights for this exciting moon.
And you're hoping to do some science on the way out and at other planetary bodies?
Yeah, we fly by Mars on the way.
Jupiter.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is Kurt. If I could just add, I'll be the optimist and go back to your best case scenario. If we do get there, and Lori mentioned the multidisciplinary approach, you need that multidisciplinary approach because answering the habitability question needs an approach from a lot of different vectors. But if we get there and we do this investigation, and the good news is it has all the ingredients and it is habitable, just think of what that means, that there are two places in one solar system that have all the ingredients for life that are habitable right now at the same time. Think of what that means when you extend that result to the billions and billions of other solar systems in this galaxy. Setting aside the is there life question on Europa, just the habitability question in and of itself opens up a huge new paradigm for searching for life in the galaxy.
Great point.
At this press conference last week, there were questions about what were the instruments aboard the Europa Clipper.
I want to ask about the science instruments. Can you talk a little bit in detail about what they are and how they're going to look for signs of life and the plumes? Will you be flying through the plumes? Is there a mass spec to determine the chemistry there? So if you could talk some detail, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, how long do you have? Yes. Excellent. This is Lori. Kurt, is that okay if I jump
in? Yeah,
on
definitely.
One? Yes. So to answer your more specific question, we do have a mass spec built by the Southwest Research Institute. So all of these sensors on board were awarded through competition. So they're built by different organizations around the country. So both the mass spectrometer and also a dust analyzer will be doing in situ kind of measurements of the actual material that's out there as we fly through it. We'll also be sensing the magnetic field, which is helpful if you want to think about a circulating saline ocean. You should see magnetic results from that. We'll be analyzing the radiation environment there, which will be quite helpful as we try and compare to our recent test results for the transistors. Then we have a bunch of remote sensing instruments. So we're going to be looking at Europa in the ultraviolet, in the visible, with a narrow angle and a wide angle camera, that the images are going to be spectacular. An infrared spectrometer and a far infrared spectrometer, which is a thermal imager, which will allow us to look for hotspots. And then we have our ice penetrating radar. And lastly, we actually use our radio on board to sense the gravity around Jupiter, or I'm sorry, around Europa. So incredible science investigations, pretty much every wavelength and in situ instruments too.
Yeah, and I just want to sort of repeat what Kurt said towards the beginning, which is this is not a life detection mission.
Yeah.
You want to add anything?
Well, you mentioned what's the probability of us flying through plumes, and I will say two things. One, we have a couple of instruments on board that are ideally suited to analyzing the plumes. One is the ultraviolet instrument, which is a great plume hunter. It can spot the plumes from a very long distance away. And the second thing I'll say is we would love to fly through a plume. But first, we've got to be able to find them, and they've got to stay active long enough for us to get the spacecraft through them. And I think that's going to be the challenge. Now, if Europa cooperates with us and we're able to fly through one, we have some instruments on board that are going to do a heck of a lot of fantastic science with that material that we analyze.
There is no rocket on Earth that can launch a spacecraft of the size and mass of the Europa Clipper directly to Jupiter. So it's going to have to do a tour of the solar system, as it were. It's going to go out to Mars and then come back past the Earth and then head off out to Jupiter. So what's it going to do when it passes Mars?
This is Jordan Evans. I'll take that. Mars is actually part of our trajectory. So the trajectory that we fly to Jupiter is a Mars-Earth gravity assist. So 4 months after launch, our primary function at Mars is to steal a little angular momentum and slingshot ourselves out, and then about a little over a year later, we come back and do the same thing at Earth before heading out to Jupiter. And so because Mars is there, we have an opportunity to do some calibrations on a couple of the instruments. And so we do plan, but those are secondary to the gravity assist itself. We do plan to do calibrations of a couple of instruments when we're at Mars. We don't plan any calibrations at Earth. And so over 5.5 years, we will be doing checkouts of all of the different systems. We will be doing a simulated flyby while we're not around any particular body heading, and then we will certainly be preparing for our Jupiter orbit insertion in April of 2030, and then the start of our science tour.
Will we get images before JOI, as we approach Jupiter? I can't remember if that's in our baseline plan.
Do you know, Kurt?
We have the ability to do so. I'm not sure if we're planning on doing that, but there will be calibration activity.
Yeah.
The imaging at Mars will be very limited because the cameras, one of the cameras will still have a cover on it. You have to remember these instruments are designed to operate at Europa and at Jupiter, which is a much different environment than, say, Mars and Earth. So we have to be very careful in our use of the instruments before we get to Jupiter, make sure that we don't damage them inadvertently by trying to get data.
That launch planned for October 10. I must point out that the Europa Clipper will not arrive at Jupiter and pass Europa until 2030. So that's quite a long journey. Well, planetary geologist Cynthia Phillips is back again now to describe how the European Ocean was discovered.
The story of the ocean on Europa is really a detective story. So basically, what we knew from ground-based telescopes back in the 1970s was that the composition of Europa's surface was predominantly water ice. So we knew that icy composition was there, and we knew that Europa was actually one of the brightest objects in our solar system. What we found when we actually flew past Europa using first the Voyager spacecraft in the late 1970s was we found a surface that was covered with these strange, long, linear features, and we saw very few impact craters on the surface. And craters are used like a kind of planetary clock. The more craters something has, the older the surface is. Because if you don't have craters, craters are formed by impacts of comets and asteroids. And so they're kind of like a clock that accumulates over time. And so if there's something going on that world that can resurface it, then those craters can go away. So that's what we saw in Europa. We saw a young surface with very few craters. And so finally, with the Galileo spacecraft in the 1990s, we saw that the long linear features were actually cracks and there were ridges on the surface. We saw areas where the surface had broken apart into these disrupted chaos terrain blocks. And we were able to observe not just the geology with images, but with other instruments as well. Mm. And so one of the key instruments was actually our gravity and radio science experiment on the Galileo spacecraft that gave us that interior structure. That told us there was a layer at the surface about 100 kilometers thick that was made up of some portion probably of solid ice and some portion of liquid water. But actually, it was the magnetometer on Galileo that measured a magnetic induction signature that we think came from a salty global ocean, a subsurface ocean. And so this magnetometer signal was one of our best bits of evidence that there actually was an ocean on Europa.
And this is the Space Show.
Southern FM.
The sounds of the Bayside.